across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! Traffic congestion in the middle of a big city. What's unusual about that? Well, there's a new train and bus station in Belfast, Grand Central Station. It was opened 10 days ago, and it seems to be causing problems for car drivers. We've had taxi drivers and motorists complaining to the show. We put some of them on air today. We also speak to transport experts. We speak to a cyclist. They want improvements to the cycling infrastructure too. Lots to think about, lots to talk about on The Nolan Show today. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning. Thanks for your company. It's Mark Simpson in the hot seat today, and I really need your input into our top story. The increased traffic problems around Belfast in the past 10 days, and it doesn't just affect people from the city, it's people coming from Lisburn or from Bangor or from Derry, Londonderry, from Enniskillen. It's 10 days since the new transport hub opened in the centre of Belfast. Grand Central Station has been billed as a game changer for public transport here. It's certainly been a game changer for some car drivers. A number of motorists have contacted us at The Nolan Show this week and last week complaining about the resulting traffic disruption around that new station. It's cars coming off the West Link, you know, as you come into Belfast there, the south way into Belfast as such. They're coming off the West Link and then they're driving straight into a log jam where they're being delayed on the Grosvenor Road or on Durham Street. That's the road behind the Europa Hotel that runs between the new station and Great Victoria Street. Now, we've had lots of texts, lots of emails sent to the programme, so we went out to see for ourselves exactly what it's like.
Hi there, I'm so sorry to bother you. I've just got a quick question about traffic congestion here in the city centre. Quite clearly, you've been stuck for a while. I'm just wondering, in your opinion, is this congestion worse than it's ever been?
Yes, I'm sorry. I am so angry right now. It's hard to speak. Yes, I've been doing this for many years and it's worse than ever. I need to get home.
And how long have you been sitting here now?
It feels like forever, 15, 20 minutes, I'm not too sure. But it's just worse than it's ever been.
And very quickly, would you consider taking the bus or the train? Would that be an option for you?
No, I wish it was. I would love to. Where I live in the country, it's ridiculous. It should be able to, and I can't. It's just not. I just can't do it.
Well, I think the lights are changing there, so look, I'll let you get on. But thank you for talking to me now.
Thank you.
So that was Taylor Johnson talking to one driver. Let's listen to another.
I come in from Lisbon semi-regularly, and the West Link in the morning is horrific. Absolutely, it can take me over an hour to get in from Lisbon here, driving in. So I know that there was plans afoot to try and build some sort of stack exchange going onto the M2 and the M5, and it never came to be. But yeah, the traffic infrastructure in Belfast isn't really fit for purpose in terms of getting in. And it's made worse now that the trains aren't running either. So it's either spend an hour sitting in traffic or cycle.
And what's the kind of longest that you've ever sat in traffic for?
Like a couple of hours, 2-3 hours.
So what's your experience been? Please contact us here at The Nolan Show. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you're a first-time caller, a rookie, a bit like me, standing in for Stephen this week. I'd love to hear your voice on the wireless. We've previously heard on this programme, I think it was last week when Holly was in the hot seat, about difficulties that motorists and taxi drivers had picking up and dropping off people at the station. We'll come to that. Well, first of all, though, speak to a number of people. We're going to speak to a taxi driver. We're going to speak to a keen cyclist. But first of all, let's bring in the Ulster Unionist Belfast City Councillor, Jim Rogers, and the roads expert, Wesley Johnson. Wesley, good morning to you first. Are you picking up these complaints too?
Yes, you can see them on social media as well. Yeah, there's definitely over the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot more people talking about this in that particular area, yeah.
And am I right, Wesley, that Durham Street that I mentioned, that's the street that goes over what's known as the Boyne Bridge. It's behind Great Victoria Street, behind the Europa Hotel and the old bus station as such. That's going to close very soon too.
Yes, that's right. Excuse me. The plan is to close Durham Street completely to remove the Boyne Bridge. it's going to be brought down to street level. before that happens, they've put in a couple of new pedestrian crossings, as people who drive there have probably noticed, to get people across, people who would have gone to the Europa previously, to get them across Durham Street into the new central station. Those are temporary. But I think that, until Durham Street closes, that pedestrian crossing is needed to get people across safely. And I think it's the bedding in of that that is one of the causes for this.
And did I hear that Durham Street could be closed for up to a year?
It's a long piece of work, yes, because the whole bridge has to be removed. There'll probably be a bit of archaeology involved. Then it needs to be rebuilt at ground level. Eventually it'll be turned into a sort of a commercial centre, Weaver's Cross, they're going to call it. So yes, it'll be a prolonged closure.
Let's bring in Jim Rogers. Jim, you've been in the city a long time, let's put it like that. You heard one car driver say the congestion is worse than ever. Really?
It absolutely is, Mark. It is shocking. It is dreadful. And I've went on foot for a wide area to try and establish, along with some of my colleagues, what's exactly wrong, and we haven't been able to pin it down. Now, Durham Street has been mentioned by Wesley and yourself and other people who have been interviewed, and we need to get on top of this because it's costing people a lot of money, whether you have a petrol vehicle, electric or diesel. And there's clearly problems. Now, there are teething problems, and obviously we'll get over them.
Yes.
But I think we need to do much more than what we have been doing in the since it opened, the new part of the roadworks.
We're going to come to Pat, the taxi driver, in a moment. But you know how politics and policy works, Jim. Is there and it may even be written down somewhere, but maybe an unwritten policy of trying to drive us, if you pardon the pun, out of our cars into that new transport hub?
I've heard people saying that, but I don't accept it for one moment. Again, people have the right to choose whether they want to travel by train, bus, taxi, private car or whatever. But sometimes motorists have a lot to answer for. They're impatient. If you look at Hard Street, and it's one of the best examples, over the last few weeks, it's been a nightmare. There's been a number of minor accidents, and people are impatient. They're pumping their horns. They're bawling and shouting at people. The whole thing is ridiculous, and I would appeal to people to give this scheme the opportunity of it being bedded down. Now, I'm saying that rather reluctantly, and I will look at it again over the next couple of weeks to see if there have been any improvements. But certainly it's disturbing, it's worrying, and lots of people who visit the City Hall have been remarking to me and other councillors that this is a very busy city. You can't move from A to B without doing this, that and the other. And you only have to look at the back of the City Hall especially. It's a total and utter nightmare.
Yeah.
And we didn't have that problem previously. Well, so there's something radically wrong. And I would appeal to the powers that be, because the councils have no responsibility regards to roads and car park and so forth.
We have calls into TransLink. I'll read you out a TransLink statement shortly. We're still waiting for the Department for Infrastructure to tell us what their view is of the past 10 days and these complaints. Speaking of complaints, Pat the taxi driver, good morning, sir.
Morning, Mark. I thought you would have took a day off after that 7-0 win. Thought you would have been out celebrating.
Thank you for bringing that up. The Carabao Cup is really the new Champions League, isn't it, Pat?
It is, 100%. Yes. I'm with you all the way. But it's ironic, though. I'm just listening to Jim Rogers, that he has actually taken traffic congestion and blamed it on the motorists. Motorists being irate, being angry. Accidents behind the City Hall. Rubbish in the town every day of the week. Hard Street, the traffic congestion on Hard Street was from Grand Central Station. They closed the left-hand lane and pushed all the traffic over to the other two lanes. So to turn left, you had to manoeuvre in the right-hand lane. And then the next week, they closed the other lane. So it's nothing to do with minor accidents or anything, and it's nothing to do. I'm really annoyed at Jim Rogers turning around to say it's the motors. It's not. It's these people within this Department for Infrastructure who have closed all these roads around Belfast. And you're right, Mark, you touched on it. Are they trying to push people out of cars and put them on the buses? But also, disabled people, cannot get dropped off at that station. They're telling us St Andrew's Square. St Andrew's Square is round in Hope Street. Walk through or push through the station. How are these people meant to get to this? No, nobody has come back, Mark. Whenever Holly raised this, we have been on to the department. We have sent numerous emails. Have you tried ringing this department, this DFI who deal the roads, the Eastern Division? I'm waiting 4 months on a phone call from one of their engineers.
Well, we're waiting for a statement, and maybe that, Pat, will answer that query. But I'm told the bus lanes are there because we have the bus replacement services for the rail services. And there are big hopes that the railways could start at Grand Central Station, maybe at the start of next month. So it's, as Jim did say, and Jim, I will let you get back and have a go back at Pat. As Jim did say, these are teething problems, perhaps, Pat, before we go back to Jim.
Right, so Mark, bus lanes, the bus substitutions are being run from Central Station.
Yes.
So the bus lanes that are put into Belfast City Centre, take for example the one leading from Great Victoria Street round in the Dublin Road. You've got a cycle lane that's the width of a bus, and then you have a bus lane, and then you have a lane for normal motorists. So you've actually taken a three-lane road and turned it into one lane. But hold on, Mark. As you go along that bus lane goes straight along for you to head into Shaftesbury Square, heading for the Lisburn Road. But the cars that are in the right lane have to cut in across white lines. It's an accident waiting to happen. Whoever designed this, this Dublin Road is an absolute nightmare. And that's just one. It's a shambles. The people who are designing these things, I don't think they're motorists. I don't think they have the motorists at heart.
Well, Pat, you say that. I was talking to somebody who works within roads, and they made the point, it's a capital city. Should we have, you called them normal motorists. What are normal motorists doing taking shortcuts through the capital city of our country in the first place, or a capital city on the island?
Mark, hold on. Sorry, I have to interrupt you. It's not a shortcut. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, you were heading to the Mac for a meeting and I stopped to give you a lift and you said, no, Pat, it's quicker for me to walk. It's not shortcuts. It's people going about their daily business. Myself, I'm a taxi driver, so I use the city centre. There's other people who use the city centre. I think if you're paying for your road duty and your insurance and such things and you've bought yourself a car, as Jim said, you have a right to use it. You know what I mean? Why are these people pushing us off the road? Are they closing the city centre down? Is that what this is all about?
Well, let's ask.
Close the city centre down. Keep people out of the city centre and just let it go to waste.
Well, no. Put people on the buses and on the trains. Jim, have a go back at Pat.
No, I have no intention of having a go at Pat or anybody else. I think we need all to work together. And I share a lot of the concerns that Pat and other taxi drivers are facing. But we need to do our level best to get this scheme right because it has cost a lot of money. And I welcome the new Central Railway Station, but it's not going to be easily resolved. It's not going to happen overnight, but we need to try and make Belfast a much more smoother city for traffic to get from A to B and B to C and so forth.
Speaking of, Jim, you're not hearing when the trains are going to start arriving at Grand Central. You haven't any inside track? Boom, boom.
Well, I'm hearing it could be within the next 4 weeks, but whether that's right or wrong, I just don't know. But several people have told me that, and I think that will also assist somewhat because people are certainly sick to the teeth at what has been happening since the introduction of this new system. But we need to work together, and especially with the powers that be that have been involved. It's so easy for all of us, especially politicians like myself, to be highly critical and unable to put forward good ideas. So I want to work with these people.
Okay.
I think it's a boost for Belfast, but at the moment, it's just not working out properly.
Here's an idea. More of a cycle into the city and around the city. Meg Hoyt is from Belfast Cycle Campaign. Am I preaching to the converted here, Meg? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you absolutely are. I was listening to your previous guest and they're absolutely right. I mean, Belfast is a very congested city, very hard to get around at the moment by car. It's just sort of chock-a-block. On my cycle in this morning, I could see everyone sitting in traffic. But I think the way to solve that is more cycle lanes, better connected cycle lanes, and better public transport as well. So bike or bus lanes as well, and having them free of cars, no one parking in them, a well-connected network, and leaving the roads for the motorists, essentially, the people who have to get around by car.
Well, that's interesting. Have you noticed in the past 10 days an increase in congestion?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I fly past cars on my bike. I mean, possibly somewhat smugly, I suppose, but could be said. But yeah, I mean, the schools are back and we know that traffic, you know, single journeys to schools, people bringing their children to school because there are no other routes. Right? I mean, if you were in the Netherlands, let's say your teenage children would cycle to school, that wouldn't be a car journey. And so those cars would be off the road. So I think it's a no-brainer, to be honest.
What's our cycling infrastructure like at the moment in Belfast, Meg?
Well, listen, it's not great. It's not great. We've been promised a lot of things. And if those things came to fruition, it would be fantastic. Belfast is not a big city. It's easy to get around by bike, but we need connected infrastructure to make it safe so that all kinds of cyclists could do it, not just the brave.
Wesley, back to you. I'm keen to know if you have any insights into when things may improve. Have you heard anything about trains arriving in Grand Central?
Nothing more than what the others have seen. I do know I have a couple of relatives who would take the train into Belfast quite often, and they've had to switch the car from Lisburn. So, you know, once the trains reopen, there are going to be some people switching back. To be honest, I think the fundamental problem here is that there are more people want to be in Belfast city centre than can be on the road at once in cars. That's the fundamental problem, you know, and I own a car. I'd love to be able to drive it everywhere, but there just isn't the space for it. So this is what part of the, you know, the move to try and get more capacity out of the road network. And the only way to do that is to have more people per unit of road space. Cars are nice to drive, but they're the least efficient way of using the road space. There's no way to square that circle other than reducing the number of people who drive. You know, this is all part of it. So I don't think there's a deliberate attempt to get people out of cars. But
you don't?
I don't, but
really?
I do think that is a side effect of a conscious effort to get people in a positive way into public transport, which is why we're building this, you know, this Grand Central Station, for example. So I think motorists probably are low down the pecking order when it comes into getting priorities in the city centre. I don't think it's all stick, however. I think there's carrot involved as well, which is why we are, you know, investing so much in the bus lanes and the Grand Central Station.
Well, it's interesting that the Department for Infrastructure can't give us an answer to some basic questions about what's been going on in the past week or so. We sent our first email to them just after 1 o'clock on Monday. They didn't reply. We followed that up yesterday at noon. Again, we were told to expect a statement. We've been on air now for 23 minutes and still no statement. Wesley, why cannot, I mean, it's not maybe fair to ask you, a department answer simple questions about what's going on in our biggest city?
When you have something like this, and as Jim said, it's sort of bedding in,
yes.
There could be any number of reasons why something like this is happening. You know, it could be those pedestrian crossing timings need to be looked at. You know, it could be. I don't know. But, you know, what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to send an engineer out there, observe the traffic, see how often the green and red lights are coming.
Okay.
To see if there's anything can be done to tweak that. You know, that's the sort of thing I'd expect to be happening.
Well, I stumbled across some figures. I'm going to put you all on the spot. I know the answer to this question. What is now the busiest day in Belfast for traffic? Wesley, what day do you think it is? I know the answer. This is a bit unfair putting you on the spot. What day?
I'm going to guess Saturday.
Saturday? Wrong answer. Right, Jim, what do you say?
I'm going to have a guess too, Friday.
Friday, okay. Meg, what do you think?
Monday.
Pat, what do you think?
Definitely Tuesday, Mark.
You're absolutely right. Explain why to our listeners, Pat.
Tuesday, just chock-a-block, stuck in traffic, just nothing moving at all, snarl up. It seems as if the whole road network within the greater Belfast and the central Belfast is just chock-a-block. Well, I don't know why.
I'll tell you why.
It's the worst day.
I'll tell you why. The reason, apparently, is a lot of people now, since COVID, have been working from home. And as you know, the favourite days to take off if you're working from home are Mondays and Fridays. Or a lot of people like to take off Thursdays and Fridays. So you're left with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday being the busiest days. Those are the days that they work from home. So you have more people working on a Tuesday, Wednesday and a Thursday. And a lot of people apparently decide, I'll work on Tuesday to get it over with. And it's interesting, you didn't know that, but that's what the science says. But you see it with your eyes, Pat, do you?
Yes, I see it sitting in the car. But it's ironic they're listening to Wesley saying that, you know, maybe the carrot and the stick and we'll have to push people out of cars. But really, this isn't what it's doing. On their land, Mark, that's what's happening. The department don't answer. We're one of the major stakeholders. Anything we ask, we're still waiting. They don't answer the question. So hopefully you get more. And maybe you can find out where the taxi rank is at the new central station and where we can drop disabled people off. We cannot unload wheelchairs on the Grosvenor Road, a busy road. We cannot take people into Glengall Street in a wheelchair, that they have to go up Glengall Street and across Durham Street to get in. The minister told us 2 weeks ago, no compromise on health and safety. This is compromising on health and safety. They opened that new station. It's impressive. It's lovely. But they didn't think of the consequences.
Well, they did.
They opened it, Mark. And there's nothing there for taxi.
But there will be. My information is that whenever they reconfigure, I think is the word they're using, the Boyne Bridge, and they level Durham Street, taxis will be able to drop and pick off on the other side, not the Grosvenor Road side.
A year's time. Well, so if somebody comes up to us in the city centre now, in a wheelchair and gets in the R taxi, where do we drop those people?
Well,
if people come, tourists or whatever, get in the R taxis to go to Central Station, where do we drop them?
You got
to
suck it up for a year and just adjust your routine. Everybody has to do it. There's no pain, no gain in any city centre. If you build something new, you're going to have to readjust.
Provide the best service that we can. But if you haven't got the tools to do your trade, you can't do it, Mark.
Let's go to the lines. I think we've got a coach driver on the line. Aaron.
Hey, how are you?
How is it for you?
Not great.
In the past 10 days or just generally?
From the open the bus station, it's just been a pure disaster, to be honest with you. The problem is that the lights they have, the temporary traffic lights, they aren't synced. And the lights are changing in one place and not another, and the traffic's getting all backed up. And then the guys are parking in the box junctions as per usual, and the other traffic can't get moving the other way. It's just a disaster.
And Aaron, have you complained? Have you got any answers from the department?
Well, I'm only a driver, to be honest with you. I don't know what's happening, so just, you know, I don't know. The boss man's been looking into that, but it probably will be. But imagine once they put the permanent lights in, I would like to think that would cure the problem. But I noticed someone was talking about the bus lanes there. I would be all on for bus lanes, but the problem is the buses can't get into the bus lanes. The amount of traffic, and then the cars are blocking the entrances to on the boxes into the bus lanes, so the buses are jammed back, building up. It's just a knock-on effect.
Aaron, thank you. We're going to take one more call. We're going to keep our guests and keep talking about this after 9:30. But before the 9:30 news, one more call. Let's go to Ballywalter. Ballywalter, David Wilson, what about you?
I'm okay. How are you?
All good, David. Are you coming up to the big smoke and finding you're stuck in traffic?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to go up there until I find out that I don't have to get stuck in traffic. I was looking forward to the opening of this station. I thought it was going to be wonderful for a place like Northern Ireland to have a central travel hub where all the trains, all the buses will go to the one place. And I would like TransLink to actually be able to say, after 10 days, one advantage that they've got from this new £340 million travel hub.
Well, David, That's a good point for me to read out their statement. They say they have worked closely with the road service to provide temporary crossing points in both Glengall Street and Durham Street to ensure safe access for passengers to and from this new Grand Central station. And they point out it can be now accessed through Durham Street or the Grosvenor Road. So you have two ways in, two ways out. They say in terms of the traffic, here's the rub. We continue to monitor these traffic management arrangements, which will remain in place until Durham Street is closed to facilitate necessary public realm works. I think that'll happen next month, by the way. We would ask all road users to be vigilant and allow extra time for their journey. So there's no end in sight, David.
Yeah, but the journeys I'm talking about here are the ones that are provided by TransLink, the train journeys, the bus journeys. How are they all going to improve? Because after the first 10 days, I can't see one single improvement.
Well, have you got a bus to the new station and seen the size, the facilities?
But the thing is, the buses from the North Down area don't go to the...
They go to Laganside. Yes, that's right.
You know, I thought Laganside might have closed and gone. They're all gone straight to the new hub.
Yeah, I think there may be a plan to bring some of the Laganside buses towards Grand Central. But when you think about it, you're saving about a mile because those buses go to Bangor and they're on the Bangor side of the city.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it isn't a central hub for everything.
David, hold that thought. Everybody hold your thoughts as well. We're going to get a quick news update and we'll be back with more at 9:32. Oh no, I've just been reminded that Gordon Lyons, who was mentioned in the news, has invited me to a swim in the sea in East Antrim this week, and I agreed on air. I need to get that arranged before the end of this week. Anyway, we're talking about Grand Central Station. We're talking about the traffic problems it seems to have caused in the city. But it's been a game changer in terms of public transport, certainly for those who get a bus. We're waiting for the trains to arrive. We expect that to happen in a couple of weeks. But we wanted to see how it is bedding in this new station. So before we go back to our guests, have a listen to this. We sent our roving reporter, Taylor Johnson, down to the station yesterday to see how it's getting on after the first tense 10 days.
This is Taylor Johnson reporting for The Nolan Show from Belfast's new Central Station. The trains haven't arrived yet, but the people certainly have. And I've gone out to chat to them and try and get their opinion on our newest transport hub. She's got a
ticket to ride. It's very big. It seems to be very empty. I would have thought half of that would have done. You're coming to get on a bus. And it's very big.
Are you impressed by the scale of it, though? Do you think it's something that the Belfast needs?
I don't really think it should be as big. I think it's really too big.
I've heard that a couple of times. Do you have an idea of maybe how it should have been instead?
Well, I notice it's a silent station, so anyone with poor vision is going to have a problem.
Yeah, major parking issues, major pick-up and drop-off issues. I have a disability. And it's quite a hike for me from the car park over to here. And there's no other way around it, unfortunately.
So what have you been forced to do yourselves today? You're coming to pick someone up?
Park and walk. I would like to, with the disability badge, I would like to get closer access. Yeah, there isn't even anywhere to stop to drop somebody off, especially the carrying luggage and stuff with them. It's quite a hike. And it's a nice day today. If it was raining, it'd be quite miserable. Here comes the sun.
But here, I guess it's brilliant. That's fantastic here. Like,
do you think now, you know, it's us finally kind of embracing change? Yes, think it's long overdue.
It's more like a small airport. It's probably better looking than the Belfast City Airport. All that light now, you've got everything's all here at hand. All the information, you can't go wrong.
We've heard a couple of people kind of voicing their concerns about parking, and it's maybe difficult for cyclists. Have you seen anything like that?
I mean, just like the airport, you're going to get a taxi to drop you off, and if somebody comes up from Dublin and you're picking them up, it should be handy enough, like.
Yeah, it looks really nice, like an airport. Yeah.
Do you think it's better than what we've had before?
It's definitely more spacious and easier to like navigate for like stations and stuff.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Does it feel as if Belfast is maybe finally coming into the 21st century?
Yes. Well, the better luck. It took us long enough.
So there you have it, a bit of a mixed bag. Some people loving it, some people thinking it's maybe a little bit too big, and others just happy that Belfast is finally in the 21st century. Back to you, Mark.
Thank you, Taylor. Now, what about some of those teething problems that were mentioned there? We're maybe going to talk about some of them in a moment. But the first one that was raised, Meg, was there was no cycle rack. But I'm told there's been one installed. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. So a temporary cycle rack has been installed. But that was not there initially. And we have been told that in phase two, there's going to be a 200 cycle capacity cycle parking thing in Saltwater Square, which has yet to become a thing. So,
okay.
So we're waiting and we're hopeful that it's going to improve. But yes, there is now a temporary cycle rack there.
Pat, the disability access issue which you raised was raised again by Taylor. What are you being told about that?
We're not being told anything, Mark. And you made the comment of you got to suck it up. So is that what you're saying to the people with disabilities? You got to suck it up. Get dropped off in Glengall Street or in Durham Street and get somebody to push you around if you're in a wheelchair or if you can't really walk. Just have to take your time to get there.
Jim, what's your impression of how the authorities have reacted to these teething problems?
Well, there's been good and bad. They're doing their level best, and I think it's up to us all to work together. It's so easy to be destructive and so forth, but it's a magnificent station.
It is.
Make no mistake about it, and it's on par with many others throughout, not just the United Kingdom, the Republic of Ireland, but the world. And I think once we all allow it to get bedded down, we'll all be changing our views and minds in many respects.
Wesley?
Yeah, I think we have to bear in mind that this, in some ways, is future-proofing. You know, the Grand Central Station isn't going to achieve its full potential until you get better bus and train services, you know, and that's a key component of this. At the minute, it's the same services in a new building, which is nice. People enjoy it. But it's future-proofing for improving in the future. And I think until that happens, we won't see it reach its full potential.
Yeah, Wesley, it's got 8 train platforms. Why so many? Is that because we do expect to find money somewhere to build more train tracks?
Yeah, we've had the All-Ireland Strategic Rail Review,
yeah,
for example, which recommends increasing frequency and routes of trains. The same with the buses. Now, finding that money is easier said than done. But this is sort of a stage one. You know, at least now we know that if we find the money to put on extra trains, we have somewhere to actually put them.
Wesley, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to Pat, thanks to Ulster Unionist Councillor Jim Rogers, thanks to cycling enthusiast Meg Hoyt. Let's take a couple of quick calls on this before we move on. Keep those calls coming, really appreciated it. Frankie, what about you?
Hello, I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, Frankie, I'm good.
I am head of business at Relate NI, which is a charity that has been Northern Ireland for 77 years. We are just based on Glengall Street, and the impact the level of traffic is having actually on our clients and service users is shocking. We're having difficulty accessing our building, even for the amount of footfall on the street. There's buses from the Dublin Express and the airport pickups that are blocking Glengall Street because they have nowhere else to drop off. Our service users are missing appointments, trying to get in, or they're late for appointments and they're only having half sessions, which is interrupting their therapeutic journey.
So Frankie, just explain to our listeners that don't know Glengall Street. That's the street that runs alongside the side of the Europa Hotel, beside where the buses used to come from.
It is, yes. It's at the side entrance to where the train station used to be.
And Frankie, Relate NI does a lot of good work. It's sensitive work as well. And I'm sure your clients, this is the last thing they need.
It definitely is the last thing they need. You know, we see children, young people, those that have neurodiversity, disabilities. We see individuals, couples and families. A lot of them are suffering from mental health issues. A lot of our referrals come from GPs and social services, CAMs. So it is having an impact on them when they're missing sessions or they're late for sessions and they're not getting their full therapeutic.
So, Frankie, why did you feel so strongly that you picked up the phone and you rang the Nolan Show today?
I think I felt really strongly. We were part of a consultation group that was led by Lynn Quarterbid as part of the process. And I think the process itself was lip service. I think it was a tick boxing exercise to say that we'd spoke to local businesses, because I don't think, especially from our point, that our needs were heard in the process. I can't speak for everybody else on the street, but I know there is another charity there that had similar issues than we did.
And have you complained to anybody, Frankie?
So we sent an email off. It was a communications officer with the email that I had. So she had forwarded on to the relevant people. And from that, I've had no response.
Right. Right. Frankie, will you keep...
Quarterbid had done a really great job in communicating our thoughts to both DFI and TransLink.
Frankie, will you keep in touch with us? Because you're right at the heart of the difficulties here. We're told they're temporary, but that's no good to you and your clients.
No, it's not good for us, and we need to keep our doors open.
Okay, that's Frankie with a business, a service she provides with her colleagues, Relate NI on Glengall Street. Let's go to Lurgan and Leonard. Leonard, have you been in the big smoke recently?
Only up and down, picking up people. I was a taxi driver, but I wanted to know, you keep talking about the bus lane and what they're going to do, get people out of their cars. Well, take it as a 10-mile journey each morning for a car and count the cost of that. And then take the buses, a 10-mile journey, the same journey, how much would that cost? Mm. They don't seem to tell you much what the prices are, but I know they're big, but and they're more likely to be twice the price what people in the car would pay.
So what are you saying, Leonard?
I was saying, tell them to put their prices down.
Of the buses?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Well, they've got to wash their own face, though, Leonard. They're not cheap to run those big buses.
Well, then, if they're not cheap to run, why do they want people to put more money out of their pocket and leave their car at home?
Gotcha. Leonard, thank you. Last call on this for now. Philip is in Belfast. Philip, are you going to have a pop at the cyclist? Please don't do that.
I have a few points, actually, but I could talk about that too. I mean, I've nothing against people cycling. Absolutely.
You're talking to one.
Yeah, right. Well, here's the thing, Mark. Right, so happy it is. Anyway, Mark, I don't know why I get on like this. Anyway, Mark, see, wouldn't that be an idea for to pay tax for people who have bicycles to pay some tax so that would go towards the infrastructure? And I don't know how that would be done and all that sort of thing. But of a few other things, like, you know, I don't know.
On that, Philip, sorry. On that, do you not want to incentivize people to cycle?
Yeah, there is that too. Yeah. That would put people off.
It would.
Okay. But
Call me William?
I did. I think I called one of your researchers, Mark, when he said Mark. So I don't know. It's just older age. I'm not going with old age. I'm going with older age.
I like it. Give us your other point quickly, Philip. Good on you.
I don't know whether they put a lot of thought into it, Mark, in terms of infrastructure and stuff like that. You know, all this here traffic and things like that. Sometimes I wonder, are we getting ahead of ourselves in terms of all these hotels and student accommodations? Are we not overdoing it in terms of, like, I don't know whether these roads can cope. Like, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
I'm hoping someone smarter or some group who deals with all this have better ideas or something like that, because sometimes I worry about all these hotels and all these here new buildings, and my God, from 20 years ago, the changes, like, you know what I mean?
But is that not a good thing, Philip, no?
I think it is a good thing, but it's just the congestion. I mean, I don't like traffic either. I sometimes, if I get on a bus and I see it's packed, I get off again. William, I'm in traffic and stuff. There's times I can cope with it. I would walk more. If I can walk, I will walk. Walking's
good
my
on you.
Thing.
And it's a good week to walk. Philip, thank you.
Right.
24 degrees, did I hear Barra say it's going to be in some places today? Particularly out west. Apparently west is best in terms of the weather this week. TransLink, if you're listening, and I know you did a lot of interviews with me 10 days ago when the station opened, please think about coming on. later in the week. We know you're busy. You have a lot on your plate. I promise I'll only ask once when the trains are going to start. I know you're fed up with that question. But do please come on, if you can, over the next couple of days and answer some of the questions which have been aired so elegantly by our listeners and our guests. We're going to stay on the transport theme. The time is coming up to just after a quarter to ten this Wednesday morning. More than £2 million, the Nolan Show has found out, which was generated in speeding fines here, has been handed back to the UK Treasury rather than kept here over the last 3 years. We're talking about the Northern Ireland Road Safety Partnership. It operates those mobile and fixed speed cameras on some of our busiest and most dangerous roads. We can make jokes about them. We can make snide remarks about them. We hate paying those fines, those of us, me included, who have been fined over the years. But the problem for us is they actually save lives. They're a good thing. Almost 72,000 speeding offences were detected last year. 71 people killed on our roads. That was the highest annual number of deaths for 8 years. And sadly, 41 people have already been killed on our roads so far this year. But what's happening with that money? Maybe, like me, naively, you thought all of that money stayed here, or what is it, 70 quid or 90 quid if we have to pay a speeding fine. Now, the partnership has blamed strict spending rules for this £2.2 million underspend. When was the last time underspend was mentioned on the Northern Ireland airwaves? Well, the money was returned to London via the Department of Justice. The SDLP MLA, Mark H. Durkin, is on the line. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mark.
What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, let me just, I suppose, express how important the issue of road safety is, and we welcome the publication of the Road Safety Strategy by the Minister for Infrastructure last week. Like many of our strategies, it's overdue and a bit underwhelming, to be honest, and it's also silent on how it's going to be funded. Now, for quite some time, for a couple of years anyway, I've been raising the issue of what I deem to be insufficient resources being allocated to deal with road safety. We were seeing that in terms of cuts to education programmes in schools, cuts to television advertising, for example, and even advertising on social media.
So why not use this £2.2 million?
That's proved extremely effective. Yet we were seeing cuts to road traffic policing. And at the same time, we were hearing over our airwaves, maybe even on this show, of a record number of fines being issued or a record number of people being detected speeding. And like, it's not hard to do the maths. So if there's a record number of people being caught speeding, then there's a record amount of revenue or income being generated through fines. So it was then I'd started poking around and asking where this money was spent. There are strict spending guidelines around the Road Safety Partnership, and I'm not pointing the finger of blame at them. It has to be funneled back into road safety measures. But my concern was that it seemed to all be being spent on enforcement. Now, there are three elements, key elements to road safety. Enforcement is one of them. The other two are education and engineering. I've touched already on the fact that education programmes were cut, public information programmes were being cut and advertising, and at the same time we're seeing DFI, the Department for Infrastructure, unable to spend money even repairing potholes, let alone rolling out more traffic calming schemes to improve road safety and reduce risk on our roads. Yet all this money seemed to be being spent on more vans with fancier cameras to catch more people. Now, I'd raised this at policing board where I'm a member. I've raised it with officials in DFI at a time when we had no government, and subsequently with the Minister for Infrastructure. And I am glad to hear that there has been a review, or a review is ongoing, of how this money can be retained and spent across and with or by road safety partners. So that's what partnerships are about.
So at the centre of this is that £2.2 million underspend. Do you know why?
Oh, sorry. Do I know why there has been this underspend? Well, to me, this is just, it sums up the silo approach to so many issues here in the north, and the structure of the Road Safety Partnership didn't allow money to go out to other partners, or so it seemed that they were partners in name only, in the Road Safety Partnership name, like, for example, the Department for Infrastructure. And that £2.2 million was the underspend over a three-year period. I've subsequently established that over a five-year period, there'd been an underspend of £3.2 million, you know, which sticks in the craw even more. You alluded there to, I suppose, the tragic number of lives being lost on our roads. Like, one death on our roads is one too many.
Yes.
And over the past few years, we have sadly seen an increase in the number of lives being lost. But I don't really want to get into the statistics on it, because I don't want to reduce the issue sheerly to statistics, because every one of these deaths is more than a statistic.
Good
it's
point.
A son, it's a daughter,
yeah.
It's a mother, a father, a brother, yeah. Sister, a friend. It's a family devastated and a community rocked. And I very much agree with the sentiment that the minister expresses in the strategy that he published last week, that basically it's all of our responsibility. All road users have a responsibility to improve road safety. But that doesn't absolve the executive or the department.
Yes.
Or the Road Safety Partnership in particular, of their responsibility as well to do more.
Well, we asked the question I've just asked you. Why are your spending rules so strict that you have to hand money back? What are the parameters for spending? Why? And I think you're saying over the past 5 years, it's more than £3 million that's been handed back. So for what it's worth, it's a little bit complex. Let me read you out what they said, their explanation. They say, this is from the Northern Ireland Road Safety Partnership. They say, with the assistance of the Department of Justice, these wider parameters have recently been forthcoming, and as a result, the partnership has developed an investment plan for 24-25 and is in the process of recruiting a project manager. Now, I'm not sure, does that mean that they're now going to spend their entire budget? What's your take on that rather garbled statement, garbled by me?
Well, I'm obviously going to have to interrogate it further. With the Road Safety Partnership, with the Department for Infrastructure and with the police, via the policing board as well, at a time when I suppose there's no money sloshing about here, it is shameful that we are sending money back, money that's meant to be spent on protecting road users and literally saving lives on our roads and promoting road safety. So whatever barriers exist that make it, you know, impossible for this money to be permeate in the other departments or be spent on road safety in our schools, literally on our streets, they need broken down, and I won't stop until they are.
Big day for you before I let you go. The city deal in the Maiden City, it's happening.
Yeah, the sun is shining here. The temperature is soaring. So there's a lot of positivity. I mean, there was a dark cloud over the city on Friday evening when news broke that the city deal or spending on the city deal had been paused. It's been a long journey. I mean, the SDLP have been campaigning for a city deal for Derry for more than 10 years at a time when, I suppose, the executive at the time were slow to take up the baton and realise the potential of city deals. But we've had a lot of ups and downs along the road. We had a big down on Friday, followed by a big up on Saturday night, thanks to the hard work of many, not least my party colleague, Colin Eastwood, MP. But a lot of positive vibes here in the city today. I'm just going to cross over into the Guildhall now.
I'll let you go.
And witness the signing. And it's imperative now that I suppose all departments step up and do their bit required to deliver on the promise and potential of this city day.
Mark H. Durkin, thank you very much indeed. We're going to go back to our top story, the problems with traffic around Grand Central Station in Belfast. Michael is on the line. Morning, Michael.
Morning, Mark. How are you doing?
What's happening?
Not much. Listen, I signed up to the Belfast Bakes on Friday, and by Monday they kicked me off because I had to report
four issues with them, separate issues. Either couldn't get bikes out of the terminals, you couldn't get them back in, which was leading to accruing charges directly onto your card if you didn't have the money in your account. And they eventually ended up closing my account. I went to check on it on Monday, and it was basically closed. And I emailed them, rang them first, had a bit of a discussion with them, said they couldn't do anything over the phone. They just said it was basically an email only issue. Right. So I had to email them. I emailed them, have it all in writing. Okay. They basically tried to blame. They tried to blame it on a fraudulent activity.
Oh, right. That sometimes happens whenever there's a lot of traffic, if you pardon the phrase, in terms of on an app. Michael, the bigger picture, were you getting on your bike because of the traffic problems or not?
Yes. But you were? I got off the glider on a Friday, and I said to myself, it's just taking too long to get home from work.
Well, so fair
play to you. I wanted to sign up to the bikes, and it just didn't work out, you know what I mean? So
we'll maybe talk to you off air, Michael, to see if we can talk to Belfast Bikes and maybe sort that out. Let's go to Frank in Finicky. Hiya, Frank.
Hi, I'm okay, thanks. I was just saying, take the traffic off the road. Try it maybe 3 days a week and put the buses on and give them better routes.
Oh, Frank. There's a thought. Like have a traffic-free day.
Yes, yes.
Maybe a Friday. You could start with a Friday.
Well, yes, but the only people, of course, you would allow to drive are like the district nurses.
Yes.
A doctor is visiting. Yes. Ambulances.
Okay.
Fire engines, you know. Yeah.
Maybe if it's a trial, Frank. I like solution-based calls.
Yes.
And you're the first of the day, Frank. So here's an idea. And what day of the week, going back to my research, I think it's Friday because a lot of people who work from home take their Fridays off. So could we have a trial Friday, a freaky Friday, whereby, but then we're into the problems, Frank. How do you register if you're a district nurse or a doctor?
Well, you can have a wee sign, like you can show them your cards, you know who you are and your equipment. Have a district nurse come to me twice a day, every day, you know, and you can have people that don't like to drive all the time, and they're happy to be able to do without their car, and get along, and if they say, oh, but I go this way, I go that way, well. You can look at the transport situation and see what they can do.
Frank, thank you. That music means it's time for me to be quiet. Thanks for all your calls. We're going to keep on this after the 10 o'clock news and also talk about should you be allowed to vote at 16? Stay tuned. Good morning. Happy Wednesday. It's Mark Simpson sitting in for Stephen on The Nolan Show this week. We're going to return to our top story before 10:30, those traffic problems in the centre of Belfast. But first, let's return to the Middle East. We've been talking about that a lot in recent weeks. Yesterday, the story of exploding pagers in Lebanon. At least 9 people have been killed, including a child. Hundreds of people are in a critical condition. Almost 3,000 people wounded in total by these simultaneous blasts. How did it happen? What did happen? What are Israel going to say about it? They haven't yet commented. Can anyone explain exactly how this did happen? Well, we're going to talk to Sally Abu Al-Jaud, who's a Beirut-based journalist for Le Orient Today. Good morning, Sally. Can you explain it?
Good morning. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. Today, everyone woke up still trying to process what happened. Everyone is still in disbelief. We are in shock. The attack yesterday was large. Some people even described it an episode from Black Mirror. Now we don't really know how this happened, but there have been some reports that small explosives were planted in pagers thousands of pagers that were used by Hezbollah members. See, Hezbollah advised its members to stop using phones in order not to be tracked by Israel. And there's been some reports that these pagers were distributed several months ago to the members. So it would seem that it's a new batch. And this attack wounded nearly 3,000 people now, including 200 we know are in critical, in a serious condition. At least nine people have died, including two children now and one woman. This is reportedly the result of a large-scale Israeli hacking operation, but no one has claimed the attack yet. Hezbollah did blame Israel, however, in a statement. They also described the attack as the biggest security breach they've ever been subjected to. The group also vowed that Israel would pay the price. We however, do not know what to expect today, in the coming hours, in the coming days. We are just waiting to see.
I'm looking at the New York Times website, Sally. They're reporting that these explosives may have been planted in this batch of pagers in Taiwan. Now, the BBC hasn't independently been able to verify that claim. But the big question is, and I think you did answer it there, is why does anyone use pagers these days?
Hezbollah told everyone, its members, including citizens in South Lebanon, in the southern suburbs of Beirut, to stop using their phones, mainly for the members and for citizens in general, to limit their use of their phones in order not to be tracked by Israel. Also to make sure they're not taking any pictures or, you know, in order not to spread the location. So they've resorted, it seems like, to using these pagers in order to send messages, in order to notify their members to be present somewhere. And it seems that these are new batches that arrived several months ago. There were claims that they're Taiwan made. They were made in Taiwan, but it looks like there's been another company in Europe under that Taiwanese company called Gold Apollo, because that company in Taiwan did release a statement saying that they're not involved. They're not part of this attack. They were not the ones who physically manufactured these pagers. And so we need to wait for more reports on what happened.
So if you're Hezbollah this morning, you know you've been infiltrated in some way. Is there anything to suggest this is an infiltration in person, that Israel, if it was Israel behind this, have someone on the inside in Hezbollah, or could this all have been done electronically with remote technology?
We need to wait for more confirmed reports, but some experts have been saying that this happened remotely, that small explosives were planted in the pagers and someone remotely detonated them. But also, some security reports emerged also saying that it might have been that Israel was planning a similar attack later on, not necessarily yesterday. They may have been forced to detonate them sooner than they were planned, possibly because a Hezbollah member discovered about these small explosives. But we don't know yet.
Sally, we've talked many times about incidents or attacks, and that the balloon could go up in the Middle East, for want of a better phrase. What do you think is going to happen next?
We really don't know. We need to wait and see. However, it's been clear that both Hezbollah and Iran, there is a conflict in South Lebanon and northern Israel. We know that. But Hezbollah has been somewhat, we can say, pragmatically constrained. They do not want a war. They made it clear, Iran and Hezbollah do not want a war with Israel or a wider war Let's say Israel, however, it seems like they've been pushing the red lines, but we don't know when this will be the moment where Hezbollah will, and Iran maybe will respond on a bigger scale. We will have to wait and see. It's very concerning.
Yeah, I bet, Sally.
Major development.
Just finally, before I let you go, if you don't mind me asking you a personal question, you're in Beirut. Do you feel safe?
A very difficult question. No, we don't. We don't really feel safe. Let me tell you that yesterday, yes, the pagers were primarily carried by Hezbollah members, but these members were within civilians. These explosions happened at grocery shops and cars that carried other regular citizens in the streets at hospitals. I know we know one worker at a hospital has been confirmed dead because of yesterday's attacks. It's very, very concerning when it comes to other attacks and assassinations as well. We do not, I cannot say I feel safe.
Sorry to hear that, Sally. Do stay safe if you can. Thanks for talking to us on The Nolan Show here in Belfast this Wednesday morning. Our top story this morning is about the traffic problems in Belfast. We've talked to Pat, the taxi driver. Let's talk now to another taxi driver. Martin, good morning.
Morning, Mark. How are you?
How are you? More to the point.
A little bit frustrated, let's say. The bus lanes are a nightmare. Listen, the biggest abusers of certain bus lanes are bus drivers, especially the back of the City Hall. They don't use it.
They don't use it?
At the top of May Street? No, okay. No, they don't. Because it holds them up too long. Okay. And bus drivers, especially if they've finished their shift or they're going for their tea, they want to get to the City Hall as quickly as they can. And that's coming from someone who used to work, it was called City Bus then.
Mm-hmm. You're showing your age, Martin. So, do they have to use the bus lanes, though? Do buses have to use the bus lanes?
Well, they're public transport, and the bus lanes, well, they're made for public transport, but okay. Private taxis are public transport, and private taxis are not allowed into bus lanes unless they're wheelchair accessible. I'm a private taxi driver, and it frustrates me that we cannot use them. It frustrates passengers in my taxi.
Martin, what about Grand Central Station? What about the impact of that?
It's a nightmare. City Centre, morning time, afternoon, is just chock-a-block. It's a standstill. I know taxi drivers that refuse to go in and work the City Centre at damn times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's having an impact on passengers. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's okay, Translink, building this beautiful bus station, but they don't care about the passengers using it.
Martin, you can't say that. And will you not get a wee turnout of it whenever people are all looking for taxis?
No, there's no access to taxis.
Well, there will be.
The nearest taxi rank, that's not what we hear.
No, there will be. I can tell you there will be. Saltwater Square, when they get that all sorted out, within a year you'll be there, you'll be round the back, and you can't have a bus and train station without a taxi rank.
Mark, I picked two disabled passengers up yesterday in Glengall Street. They had a walk. Both of them were using sticks, and both were well into their 70s. They had a walk right down to Glengall Street to get a taxi.
Okay. Okay, you know, Martin, well, keep in touch with us. If things improve as well, keep in touch with us. Eileen's on the line from Lurgan. Morning to you, Eileen.
Morning.
Is the sun shining in sunny Lurgan?
It is. It's lovely, and I'm off work today.
Happy days. Lucky you. What about the Belfast traffic? What do you think?
I'm not sure about the Belfast traffic, but my issue is getting home from Belfast back to Lurgan with the services.
Okay.
With concerts and shows and all, you could the last one to our area never coincided with any times of the ending of the shows.
Right. So what sort of shows are we talking about here, Eileen? What are you into?
Well, I was trying to organise the bus service this on Saturday the 5th of October, because my friends are going down to see Saxon City Hall. So with your show being on, I just prompted me to check out the times because we meet at the park and ride and get into 1 kilometre.
Right.
Which is a bit senseless since we're on a park and ride.
Where is the park and ride? Remind me.
Lochfey Lurgan.
Okay, lovely.
So, and then we've obviously a designated driver, but we can't do the park and ride with the bus or even get a train because there's never one to bring us back home.
Gotcha.
The last one is kind of early.
Eileen, so, have you seen the new station though?
No, that's why I was going to go down to the new station and check it out.
Give me a shout.
The last,
I'll show you around. I'll show you around and we'll see if we can talk to someone.
Yeah.
Next time you're up, Eileen, get in touch with me. Would you?
Okay. Yeah.
It'd be good to see what the people of Lurgan think of the Belfast Grand Central Station. Eileen, yeah. You're not a smoker, are you? You don't mind me asking that? Or a vapor? Or a vapor?
A vapor.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to listen on because we're going to talk about that now, Eileen. And listen, I'll see you at Grand Central soon. Very soon. That's Eileen in Lurgan. Yeah, we are going to talk about e-cigarettes. The Republic down south are going to curb the usage of e-cigarettes. You maybe heard this. It's going to include the ban of single-use vapes and a wide range of vaping flavours. The legislation will block the sale of flavours that the government believe appeal to children. The health minister down there said the plans to introduce the ban are on environmental and public health grounds. But is this an overreach? Is this the nanny state? Fraser Myers is deputy editor at Spiked Online. Naomi Thompson is from ASH, Action on Smoking and Health. I'll go to you first, Fraser. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you make of this?
Well, I think we need to be clear that this is not a public health policy. This is an anti-public health policy. Public Health England, the now defunct health body in the UK, recognised that vaping is 95% safer than smoking, and vaping is twice as effective as all other forms of nicotine replacement therapies. So, you know, vaping is the best way to stop people from smoking. I think we all agree that smoking is bad for us and it's better if people quit. Anything that makes vaping more difficult is just going to slow down that progress. Or, in fact, you know, encourage people to take up cigarettes.
Naomi.
Yes, good morning, Mark.
Hiya.
Yes. I would disagree slightly with what was just being said, because the reality here is the ban is on single-use disposable vapes, which tend to be the highly coloured, highly flavoured versions. For the smoker who wishes to quit using a vape, there still will be the refillable, rechargeable devices with flavours. That they can use if they wish to do that. But bearing in mind, and we work with smokers who are trying to quit smoking and are using a vape, many do find that when they start using the vape, they use it more than they ever would have smoked, and especially if they're using the disposable version. So they're using more nicotine and getting themselves more addicted. It's always in their hand. So as a public health measure, actually, the banning disposable vapes is a positive because there's still an alternative, whether it's the reusable vape or whether it's other products that are out there. And can I just say, for Stop Smoking Services in Northern Ireland, actually, we get as good a quit rate in our Stop Smoking Services as the study that showed that vapes were twice as effective as nicotine replacement in a study that was done in London. So we're pretty good here in Northern Ireland, and we've got good alternatives.
What do you think of that, Fraser?
Well, I think, you know, smoking and vaping are direct substitutes. If you make it more difficult to vape, which this proposal does, if you're banning, you know, disposable vapes are popular, they're clearly the easiest way to go about vaping, then you're just going to encourage people to smoke. I mean, the other point is that, you know, this is not really, why are we worried about adults taking up vaping anyway? This is not particularly damaging to their health. It seems like a very low-level problem. If people do have vices, I think that's something that we have to kind of accept. You know, not all of us, people like to drink, people like to do things that give them pleasure, and smoking and vaping are those things. You know, that it falls into that category. People are always going to look for something that gives them a kind of hit or a buzz. And vaping is just, frankly, the safest way to do it. You know, it's like if you came up with a thought experiment, if you said, what would you do about cigarettes if there were very few, you know, health benefits? Here we have it. We have these things exist. let's, you know, let people take them. It just goes to show that this actually, most nanny state policies don't really have anything to do with health. This is about essentially casting aspersions on people's lifestyles, looking down on people for doing things that I guess people don't approve of.
Frizz, you can't say this has nothing to do with improving health, really?
Absolutely can. If you're talking about a measure that is going to make people less healthy, then it's pretty clear that this is simply a question of, you know, disapproval of vaping.
Naomi, what about you? What do you say?
I think with regard to the freedom side of things and the choice of adults, what we are seeing is a lot of younger adults are taking up, never mind the young people who are definitely using the disposable versions of the vapes, even though they're not meant to be being sold them. But so the reality is with any vape that contains nicotine, it's not a freedom of choice. Once you start using nicotine, whether you've been a smoker or not, it is very hard to put it down. And with regard to whether we know whether there's going to be health, longer term health issues, it's too soon yet to actually know. But what we do know is that we start to see people, yes, certainly with their brain health and anxiety, and that's what smokers will tell us whenever they've moved on to the vape, that they feel anxious without that that crutch with them. And we know nicotine affects brain health. But we also know that there's potential around lung health, and certainly if somebody has a history of asthma, okay, that there's real issues with the vapes, and also dental health issues. So I think we can't just say they're absolutely safe. And I think when we know we've got other products that are also there, but there is still that freedom of choice of using the reusable vape if they wish to.
Naomi, would you like to see what's happening in the Republic happening up here?
Absolutely, and we do hope that actually such legislation will come in under environmental health grounds. Like, bear in mind, in the UK, we have about 5 million disposable vapes thrown away every single week. What a lot of plastic, what a lot of metals. Then we've got the battery, and we also have nicotine, and nicotine is actually an insecticide. So the damage that's all doing to the ground.
Fraser, last word to you.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't over-exaggerate the amount of addiction that takes place here. I mean, 69% of all the people in England who have ever smoked are now non-smokers. People can quit, and one of the best things that is currently helping them to quit is vaping. So let's encourage smokers to take up vaping. Let's not encourage non-smokers to take it up. Certainly, I agree, you know, there's a problem with children. Crack down on people selling vapes to children. That's absolutely disgraceful. We should do more to enforce the law if it exists. But there is also a worry that, you know, if you enforce or if you restrict legal products too harshly, then a black market develops.
Of course.
Actually, a lot of the problems that are associated with vaping are already illegal. You know, full-on prohibition doesn't work. If it did, you know, then we would also be a drug-free society, and unfortunately we're not.
We certainly
People
aren't.
People speak out for the pleasure.
We certainly aren't. Fraser Myers, thank you. Naomi Thompson, thank you. I think we're going to return to that issue. I think it could be a big issue up here as well. Let's go back to the lines and on vaping. Michael is there. Quick word on vaping because I want to return to Belfast Central too. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Mark. Our super sub, as I've called you on your travels, as you know, we know it's a weigh-in joke.
Yep.
Mark, I saw some time ago a documentary on an accredited health professionals who claimed that vaping is as dangerous as smoking, and in the years to come, this will be proven right. The concomitant health risks and very dangerous risks, and the results may be there to be seen in the future generations, and I hope they're proven wrong.
Michael, thank you. Let's do return to our top story. Gary's on the line, Belfast Central and the traffic problems in Belfast City Centre. Gary, what's your point?
Just 20 minutes, sir, coming through it, Mark, sitting listening to all the conversation. The taxi drivers are right there. But see, when they get the engineers down and they look at it, I sat and, as you were talking, I was sitting watching the problems in the traffic. I was coming along from Shaftesbury Square. So as you come along to Hope Street, the bus lanes start there and I go along. It's sitting empty, which it should be, only buses on it. But the traffic starts getting snarled up at Hope Street. And then if you see on down, it's the lights at the Grosvenor Road. Those temporary traffic lights are not in sync with the pedestrian lights that's outside the Europa, and then the traffic coming out of Glengall Street. So just as I got to the Europa ones, the Europa ones turned green, the letters go, but you couldn't move because the temporary ones were sitting at red. So they were, and with the Uber ones, with those sitting at red, two cars get through in front of us, and then the traffic, the buses and the taxis started getting out of Glengall Street. So it meant that we were sitting at the Europa. When you did eventually get a green light, you couldn't go anywhere because the three or four places that was filled in front and was filled with a bus and a couple of traffic was coming out of Glengall Street. So nothing at all is in sync, and it's snarling the traffic right back as far as Shaftesbury Square.
And you work on the road, you drive a van, so...
Yeah, see, and I said, as you were speaking about it, I was sitting watching, and I timed myself 17 minutes. So then it took me to get right through back on the lower falls, to come up the falls.
Gary, on another subject, are you a football fan? Do you remember Italian 90?
I do indeed.
Sad news. Toto Scarlatti, top scorer at the 1990 World Cup, has died at the age of 59.
Do you ever remember the expression on his face and the celebration when he scored?
Oh, yes, yes. I think he put the Republic out in the end, didn't he, in the quarterfinals?
Yeah, yeah.
Jack Charlton's Green and White Army. Gary, thank you very much indeed. Last call on this. Let's go to the northwest. Kathy's on the line from Derry, Londonderry. Hi, Kathy.
Hiya, how are you?
Good. Talk to me.
It's very similar to that last caller there. Like, I had been up last week for a hospital appointment, so obviously travel up and from Derry. And it was actually coming back from the hospital appointment from City Hospital to the new bus station. Now, normally I would walk it. It's only why I actually asked the taxi man the distance. It was 1.2 mile, he told me, but I wasn't well enough after my hospital appointment. So basically, just what your last caller was saying there about those temporary traffic lights on that Grosvenor Road, because I'm not from Belfast, so I don't know the names of roads, but they're none of those lights are in sync. So it took me 45 minutes to get from the City Hospital to the bus station, and it cost me £18 in a taxi.
£18? Roughly how long was that, in terms of miles, was the journey?
1.2 miles was what the taxi man told me the distance was, because like that wouldn't bar me in the slightest walking. But because I was just sore after getting some hospital treatment, I wasn't fit enough to do that.
Kathy.
So like I'm sure I'm not the only person it's costing people money, because just he was even saying himself, just those lights are just not basically in sync, the taxi man was saying. So and I do this every week. I'm up and down every week because, I attend the hospital in Belfast. So, Transit need to do something, because it's costing local people, not just local people, but people coming to Belfast for whatever reason, and if they have to travel in and around that area by taxi it's costing people too much money.
What's the traffic like in Derry these days? It's a while since I've been up there.
It's not too bad. I think the only issue at the moment is because they're putting in, NI Water's putting in the new water main sort of Foyle Street direction, okay. So that's closed. So, normally the traffic's fairly well moving in Derry, unless one of the bridges closes and then it just comes to a standstill.
Have they got that Derry Girls mural sorted out?
It's finished. It looks great.
No, but part of it's been obscured. They've put an awning up. Did you see that?
It looks brilliant. It's just a pity you can't see part of it. But sure, the legacy of Derry Girls is going to be there for a long, long time to come. So it's gone everywhere. So even people still talk about it. So.
It's lovely to listen to a Derry Girl on the Nolan Show today.
But I suppose the point I just want to make is that they
Kathy. I'm sorry. That music means I'm going to have to shut up and let Connor Phillips take you through the rest of Wednesday morning. Thanks for your company. We're back tomorrow.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.